Where are the topos? I expected topos.
You know what?
Caught him in an office day.
Hey, you did.
Dang. Yeah. Bummer.
Gosh, that would be so
You didn't
much
bring
better.
Any?
No.
Pop. What's up with that?
I don't know. I don't know if we can go through with it without.
Well, guys, it's canceled.
I'll send Kaler over to the grocery store to get us some topos. Yeah.
Send him over to Starbucks. They might have some.
Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus's strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I'm your host for today, Ben Borgman, the executive director of Disciple First, who really, we're a ministry that is all about helping you make and multiply disciples like Jesus. And if you're a normal listener for us, or if you're brand new this week on this episode, we have a treat today. So, but before I get kind of tell you who's on the air, a special guest today, we're gonna go to who else is in the room today. We got good old faithful. I know you like when I call you, and remember, it's old.
Not old. Thank faithful. You. Thank you very much, Ben. Thank
Just
you.
Faithful contributor.
That's Mr. right. Thank you, Ben.
How are you doing today?
Just fantastic. Great day. Productive day so far. Had lots of good meetings. We're actually shooting this kind of in the middle of the work week. And but I've been looking forward to today because this is a special episode.
It is.
We've never had an episode like this one.
Never. We actually have one of Craig's daughters.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Oldest daughter, the favored one, the firstborn.
Not necessarily
like
favored, but
I like
the first
sound
one.
Of that.
And so, Leah Beth Etheridge is on the.
Hey guys,
today.
How's it going?
All
Thanks
right.
for having me.
Little
I appreciate
hand clap
it.
The.
Oh yes,
we put that
the audience
sound,
clap.
Yeah. Taylor, we need sound effects. No sound effects.
No sound effects today.
Yeah, so we were joking. We're going to kind of do a tell-all expose episode today. Just get all the behind-the-scenes details of Craig. And
I'm not so sure about that.
No. I'll tell you anything you want to know.
she's not really a – it's not kind of a tight lid on that one.
No. I think she's ready to spill it all.
It's just because I love you, Dad. That's it. It's just because I love you.
Thank you so much.
No, she's had an exciting day, too. She just jumped out of an airplane
this
morning.
She did.
Yeah, went skydiving this morning.
Unbelievable.
For the first time.
God bless you. Good thing you're still with us.
We're still here. I told some of my friends in New York, I said, before I left, I was like, I'll either see you on Wednesday or I'll see you in glory. Either way, I'll see you guys soon.
Well, thank you for making it so we didn't have to find another guest for today so we can stay on our podcast.
Of course, anytime.
That was highest priority, but no. So it was fun.
Oh, yeah, it was a blast. It was a blast. I was terrified, obviously.
Yeah, I can.
You're jumping out of an airplane. And when that door opens at 14,000 feet, you know, that was very scary. But I've struggled with fear kind of my whole life. Wow. And the Lord has taught me through many different avenues to conquer fear. And so I really felt like this was another opportunity for me to do that. So one of my best friends, she is a huge Tom Cruise fan. And so she had on her bucket list to jump out of an airplane and we had an opportunity and we seized it. So it was really
play
fun.
Like Mission Impossible music before you jumped out? Or
no,
that
but
been great.
I know we should have to hype ourselves up. That's for sure. But as soon as we landed, I gave her a hug and said, Tom would be proud.
No doubt.
That's great. Good way to conquer your fears.
Good.
But
right.
So it is a treat today. You know, we're joking around, but it is a treat today to have you on because Leah Beth serves in a very special, unique area in New York City. We'll have her tell kind of how she ended up in New York City. But, you know, she's been there for years ministering and just a great disciple-making leader just really God using her in a unique context and a unique way to serve a community there in New York City. So excited to have you on today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here, you guys.
Yeah, so let's just, again, I would say we just get right to it, Craig. We don't normally kind of go around the bush too much or beat around the bush too much, but let's just go right at it and just, Leah Beth, just tell us kind of a little more about yourself, kind of maybe a little bit about your spiritual story, background, a little bit kind of, you know, being a preacher's kid, I'm sure that wasn't always easy.
Yeah.
And then just really kind of how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, my gosh, there's so much. I mean, I obviously grew up as a pastor's kid. This man to my right is my father. And I really did like growing up as a preacher's kid. We had a unique growing up as a pastor's kid, the average of a pastor to stay at church is usually 3 to 5 years. But we were lucky enough to stay at a church first in Oklahoma for how long was that, Dad?
About 11 years.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. I was about to say 10, 11 years. Yeah. And then from there, when I was in seventh grade, we moved here back to Texas for my parents and Texas for me. And I did all of my middle school and high school and even into college. I went to Baylor University, sick and bears, for musical theater. I have my BFA in musical theater performance from there. And I really enjoyed being a pastor's kid. I accepted Christ at 7. This is a fun little story. If anybody knows Bible Man, all of you listeners, if you grew up in the church at all in the 90s, early 2000s, I was a huge superhero fan, even as a kid. And I was watching Bible Man one day, and the episode was The Thief of Joy. And there was a whole fight scene, and within it, they presented the gospel in a really creative way. And at the end, they do an altar call at the end of every video. And I ran into my mom's room. My dad was actually out. He was going to see Jurassic Park,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I ran into my mom's room, and I was like, I need to accept Jesus right now. And she was like, really? Don't you want to wait till Dad gets home? I said, no, I want to do it right now. Yes. And so my mom led me to Christ there, and that was really sweet. And I do really believe that that's when I gave my life over to Jesus, was at 7. And throughout high school, I followed the Lord and loved Jesus. But as I got older, especially around senior year of high school, just giving you a little background on my spiritual life, I really felt like the Lord became kind of a passenger in my car. Wow. I was like, okay, this is where we're going. This is what we're going to do. I had auditioned at over 20 different colleges. And so I was very much so on track to go to a musical theater school, and was passionate about that and very driven. I've always been a little ambitious. And so the Lord was there, but he was in the driver's seat and I was captain of the ship. I knew exactly where I wanted to be. And then my senior year of high school, I got a scholarship to Baylor, was on top of the world. And then a family friend of ours, their son was killed in a car accident my senior year of high school. And that really, really rocked my spiritual world. I did what I like to call the Thomas gamble or the Thomas deal with God, where I was like, I really just felt like God was there, but he wasn't good. And if he was good, he certainly didn't care about me. And so I made this deal with the Lord where I was like, okay, Lord, you're either going to show up or you don't care about me, like Thomas did. And in my dorm room, my freshman year of college, the Lord just met me. I was reading my Bible because I had had a conversation with my dad in the hallway where he had just pretty much begged me to read the word. And I, out of obligation, he told me, he was like, if you're not going to read it for the Lord, read it for me. Because you love me. And I was like, rolled my eyes and was like, whatever. Got off the phone, went to my dorm room, and the Spirit, I think, just led me back to the word. And I opened it and I read the story of Doubting Thomas, and the Lord just spoke to me. So I rededicated my life in that dorm room in college. And then college was a struggle. College was really, I loved Baylor, but college was really hard for me spiritually. I had some trouble with friends, and it was just a hard season, even though I loved theater and I loved learning and I loved everything that happened at Baylor. Baylor's a great school and I enjoyed my time there. I knew in that season the Lord confirmed that I needed to go to New York, but we had no way for me to get there. I didn't have a job. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have any reason to go other than the Lord was like, you're going to go. And so I talked with my parents and I said, I want to go. And we decided that we were going to make a deal that I graduated in May, and they said, okay, from May to December, we're going to pray and we're going to ask the Lord and we're going to ask for open doors to move to New York. If you don't get anything by December, then you'll wait until the new year and then we'll try again in January. And I was like, that sounds like a great option to me. Let's do it. So we put out feelers, and through the church grapevine, if you're a pastor's kid, you know all the church people know all the other church people in the area.
I've always got a buddy.
He's always got a buddy, always, always has a buddy. And his buddy knew a buddy, and a family that was once at Prestonwood Baptist, Jordan and Kayla Rizard. Hi, guys, if you're listening. They had just recently moved to New York. She was a musical theater performer, and he was a musician, a worship pastor and a musician. They had moved to New York to serve the Lord at a church, and I had a FaceTime video call with them. And that 30 minutes turned into 2-hour conversation. And by the end of it, Jordan, the husband, was like, well, why don't you just hop on a red eye and come up here and see what it's like? And I said, okay. So I hopped on a red eye and flew to New York and stayed 3 days with them. And then at the end of those 3 days, Kayla, the wife, came into the room I was staying in and said, we feel like the Lord has told us that you need to be our live-in nanny. You have a room here if you want it. So I came home, graduated in May, and was in New York in October. So that's a little like overview of my story getting to New York, and a little bit of my spiritual history, but yeah.
And you were living in a old hotel.
Yes.
That was kind of converted. It was owned by a church.
Yes.
Real fascinating.
Yeah.
Calvary Baptist Church there owned this hotel, and they kind of knocked some walls out and kind of created it as like a little apartment for some of the church employees, because Jordan was working as a worship pastor there. And so anyway, it was just really interesting. Got some crazy stories.
Yeah,
but right across the street from Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, literally across the street. You could look out my window and see Carnegie Hall, which is insane because this converted hotel was not very nice at all. And yet we were on Billionaire Row. Mm. So you walk less than half a block over to the left and you're on Fifth Avenue where Trump Tower is and all these billionaires live. And so it was kind of crazy to live in this little rundown place on Billionaire
right,
Row.
Right in the heart of the city, in the heart of everything. So it was quite an adventure.
Yeah.
Just coming out of Baylor.
Yeah, and I loved it. I mean, I immediately loved the city. I had visited a few times when I was in high school and then in college, but living there had always been a theater dream and a personal dream. And so even just from the moment touching down, I was like, I know I'm supposed to be here. And Kayla and Jordan were and continue to be a huge influence on my spiritual life. Kayla really took me under her wing living with them, and she taught me how to teach, which was a big deal. She discipled me a lot while I was with them, continues to be one of my really good friends. So it was a really sweet time.
So when you think about discipleship influences in your life, she is a huge person.
Yeah, she is.
That really spoke into you and invested into you. Mm-hmm. Was that a formal thing or was that a informal? How would you describe that?
I would say it was kind of yes and. So at the very beginning, it was very informal. It was just honestly by proxy. When you live with somebody and you're taking care of their children, they want to know everything about you. And so it was a lot of dinners and conversation and prayer and church on Sunday and things like that that were just living your life with another person. And friendship. Her and I just became really good friends really quickly. We're very similar people. We operate in very similar ways.
She's a preacher's kid,
She's too. A PK as well, yeah. And so we just bonded really easily. And so it was informal in that respect. And then the longer I lived in the city, the more formal it became. And a lot of that was to do with the hang. She would meet, when it became more formal, we would meet together with me and then Rachel Gifford, who is my best friend, one of my best friends who I jumped with today. She and I and Kayla would meet together at a coffee shop and we would do more of a formal thing. But that didn't totally last very long because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
More of a formal discipleship, I would say, would be for Becky Stamps, who has kind of been in my life since I was in middle school. And she and I have been in a discipleship relationship for a while. And then honestly, Mom, mm-hmm. I think are probably my top three discipleship women in my life. Mm-hmm. Then we have men too, but those three women have really shaped the way that I view scripture and view discipleship as a whole.
Yeah.
Already, just listening to you already, Leahbeth, just in this front half of your life, just how God, you can just see how God placed these relationships, these people around you in
Absolutely.
Relationships. And I think, we talk a lot about in Disciple Making Leader, and as you've written that, as we train people, is trying to help people see that ministry is more about relationships than it is about your program.
100%.
And that, you know, programs and groups, all those things are great, but they're really just how you organize relationships, but really people move and grow through relational investment, and that kind of signifies a disciple-making leader. And but I can already, you just, it's kind of cool to just watch how God used different people in your life to just keep you moving in the right direction where he needs you to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another cool thing about your story is you're just telling it is how God was already preparing you for where you are now, even back in Oklahoma City days.
Oh, yeah.
We were there and we were in an urban context, very ethnically diverse, very socioeconomically diverse. And so that you just grew up around that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was very common for you. That was your life.
Yeah.
And so I can see even how that God used that to prepare you to be in the city in an urban context, very, very diverse population, and feel very comfortable there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think about that a lot. I also think about when I was in high school, I played basketball. I loved playing sports. And until I got bit by the theater bug, as we say in the industry. But I was in my first musical at Birdville High School. And I just fell in love with it, ended up stopping playing basketball. I had a little Troy Bolton moment, if anybody knows High School Musical, where I was like, do I pick basketball or theater? it was kind of crazy. But I ended up going with theater, and I went to FCA after that because I had a bunch of friends who were on my basketball team who went to FCA. And I don't think by anybody's fault, I don't think anybody was trying to be malicious, but I did not feel accepted. Since leaving my basketball team and going over to do more theater, I just did not feel accepted there. And Dad picked me up from FCA, and I remember just sitting in the car, just crying and being like, there is nothing like this for me or people like me. Mm-hmm. And I think about that, and now I think about the hang, and I'm going, okay, like the Lord was even preparing that in my heart. And through other people affirming that since I've been in high school.
Yeah, I think that was the Lord birthing something in you even there, that there needed to be a place for the theater kid, the choir kid, the band kid, the artist person, that there need, where is there a community for them?
Yeah.
And who is taking the gospel to them and who's nurturing them?
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't fully know what was coming, but you can look back and say, wow, you know, that was, God was already birthing that. And so you are now living with the Grizzards, you're living with them in the city, and they start a Bible study.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Yeah. So Jordan and Kayla are one of the many things that I love about them is they are extremely clear on what their mission is. They always say our mission as a family is to minister to artists and that's inside the church and outside of the church. That's what they believe the Lord has given them as a directive for their family. And so Kayla was like, we have to figure out a way to minister to people to do that, to inside and outside of the church. And one way they did that was they opened up our home and they would get pizza. And people go anywhere for free food, just saying, they will.
Sometimes it's not that complicated, right?
Sometimes it's not. It's really not. And especially in New York where everything is expensive, if somebody's like, hey, I've got free food at my house, people will show up. And so they opened up our home and we're just there to hang out. The name The Hang comes from, you know, you want to just hang out? It's very simple. You want to just be together. You want to just hang out. And at the first hang, quote unquote, ever, there were 5 people. Now, the crazy thing about that is the hang never was supposed to be a thing. It was intended to be a thing. It was never intended to be an official organization or a ministry or anything. It was just opening up somebody's home to speak into artists and love them and encourage them toward Christ-likeness. It never was supposed to be anything more than that, at least in Kayla's mind, and then eventually in mine as I continued to live with them. But that group of 5 told their friends who told their friends, and people just started, I say it a lot, like it was like living in Acts, where people literally that we had no idea where they came from or who they were knocked on our front door and were like, hi, so-and-so told me that there's a group of Christian artists here. Can we come in? And that group of five turned to 10, which turned to 20, which turned to 25, which turned to 30. And by that point, we're going, we can't keep all these people in our apartment. And
the apartment was very small.
Yeah, it was very small. And the Lord just confirmed to Kayla that this needed to be an official ministry. So she ended up taking the ministry through all the official, you know, 501c3 things and everything to make it a ministry. And her and Jordan actually shifted into raising funds to do this as their full-time job.
Wow.
And I was there during that whole transition and learning from Kayla and watching that develop. And that's where I got all of my very best friends in the world was from that. And one thing we prayed for when I moved to the city was community, and the Lord provided that in droves with these people. And so, yeah, it was that whole transition up until right up until the pandemic. We were eventually running around between 80, at the low end 70, at the high end 90 artists in New York City in a basement on the Upper West Side. Wow. And that was a pretty crazy time for sure.
Very crazy time.
We got to visit during that time at the beginning or towards, right, because it was, I think, 2019 when we went. We were doing some training with North American Mission
Board. That's right.
We were able to go to like a Wednesday night thing or something there down in that basement.
Very man, cool. And it was fun time, exciting time, watching the ministry grow. And then the pandemic hits.
Yes, it does.
And you stayed in New York City all the way through this.
Yeah, I did.
So what happens to the Hang, and what happens to you and to all the artists there?
Yeah. Well, that's a really, what happened is our industry shut down. So we were the first to shut down and the last to open. Mm-hmm. And artists fled. They really did. Wow. The city vacated within a week. It felt like, I'm not trying to be dramatic, it really did feel like an episode, like I Am Legend. Like it felt like a ghost town.
Wow.
Evan Bertram, who's one of my other very best friends, Rachel Gifford, me, and then our friend Celeste, we walked the entire length of Manhattan during the pandemic. Started at 207th Street and walked all the way down to the Statue of Liberty. It's 13.5 miles. And during that time, you could walk down the center of Times Square and not see a human. Really? It was unreal.
Oh, wow.
All the lights dark, the theaters, doors locked with signs that say, be back in a week. This is like,
yeah,
it felt like being in an apocalypse. It really did. The people who stayed would gather as much as we could in Central Park or outdoors, sitting on stoops and things like that to try to see each other. And Kayla and Jordan over that time decided to move their girls out of the city and away, which was the right decision for them. And I think that was a really good call. They're living in Arkansas now and thriving, and it's awesome. But that put the Hang in a very precarious situation. Not necessarily them leaving, but the pandemic in general put us in a very precarious situation, because the people we were ministering to became very, very little. And we didn't even know if they were going to come back.
Yeah.
Like, it was just kind of like everything stopped cold turkey. And by all accounts, the ministry should have died. Mm. It should have. 100,000%. It should not exist today.
Yeah.
It really shouldn't. And I asked the Lord. I said, do you want to be done? I'm ready to be done. We can be done. I promise. We can start something new. We can be done. And the Lord was very persistent on no. And over that period of time, a lot of our professional and social events that we do turned into meeting together at the park. We had Bible study in Central Park, which was kind of crazy. Meeting together at the park, eating food, passing 10 feet apart from each other, like trying to pass food to each other, eating picnics, and then paying for people's groceries, paying for their rent because people weren't able to pay for rent, doing lots of practical things like that over the pandemic until everything started to slowly but surely come back to life. And now everything is thriving again like it never happened. I call it the blip. It's kind of like if you know Marvel at all.
Yeah,
it's like Thanos snapped and then all of a sudden everything snapped back and the city is thriving again. But that was a very like interesting and precarious time for everybody. But yeah.
And your role changed with the Hang. during that time period?
Yeah, yeah, pretty significantly it did. During that time period, we, Kayla and Jordan, as they moved away, we needed people to step up as what we called grounds directors. So it was just kind of boots on the ground mm-hmm. versus executive directors. Kayla and Jordan were over, you know, the ministry as a whole, I guess, on a logistics standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then us as ground directors were there to just make sure the ministry functioned. People were being fed, people were being communicated to, all of that kind of thing. So I stepped up into that role along with Rachel Gifford and Evan Bertram for a while. And we were that throughout the pandemic. And so that was more of an official leadership capacity. I had served, quote unquote, on the team for a while doing events and things like that. But that was the most official it had been up until that point.
Yeah. And then now your role is the co-executive director.
Yeah.
And so how does that change your perspective on the ministry?
Being in that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it completely changes it so much. As an executive director, yeah. chuckles over there on the other side.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a weight. There's a weight.
There's a weight. Yeah, there's a weight. A co-executive, I'm very thankful that I have an incredible co-executive director in Sawyer Pollock. The Lord brought him and really lifted him up for us both to lead the ministry the way that we do. And so I don't think that I could do it by myself, to be honest. I'm sure the Lord would equip and give the necessary things, but I think that this was exactly what the Lord wanted with us doing it together as friends. But it changes my perspective in terms of all the logistics. I'm thinking about not only, okay, how do we plan for the next quarter? What are we doing? All of that kind of stuff. But it also changes on, you know, the finances now, the longevity of the ministry. We know something that my dad taught me really young was healthy things multiply. And so it's like, what does that look like for our ministry? Do we want that to happen? It's just a lot more ownership. Mm. And ownership over what we teach at Bible study, how people are connecting with each other, leading people a lot more rather than just participating in small ways. It's going, okay, how then do I lead a group of people in the best way possible to get them to actually become not passive Christians but passionate Christ followers? That's what Kayla taught us. And I continue to kind of try to keep that as a motif in my head and whenever I need it. But yeah, that's kind of, it widens my view.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time talking to pastors and leaders about leadership pipelines mm-hmm. and developing people underneath and that sort of thing. And that's exactly what you're doing. I mean, you're in the throes of that right now. Talk to us a little bit about the function of the hang is not just to hang out.
There, not anymore.
There's a spiritual development piece to that,
yeah,
and then a professional piece to that.
Yeah.
So kind of explain that a little bit and maybe tease out the spiritual development piece. What does that look like, and what does it look like to disciple artists in the Big Apple?
Yeah. Sure. So the Hang's mission, the Hang exists to support and encourage artists socially, professionally, and spiritually. So we operate kind of in those three different areas. We talk about the social side of it. One of the biggest lies that the enemy tells artists when they move to New York City is that you're alone. There's this pervasive idea that, especially if you grow up somewhere that is very culturally unlike New York. So you don't grow up in a big city, or you grow up, you know, somewhere that's very culturally different. You truly do believe. The amount of times I've heard this isn't actually mind-boggling to me, but you truly, truly believe that you are going as a believer by yourself. You genuinely do. You're like, I'm going to go here and I'm going to be the only person following Jesus. Now, when you think about that logically, there are 4.8 million people, or even more than that. I know that statistic is wrong, but millions of people on an island in New York City. Surely there will be more Christ followers. And there are, let me tell you, there are people there who are sold out for Jesus and are drawing people to himself every single day. But that's a lie of the enemy that is pervasive to, I believe, keep people away. Mm. I genuinely do. I think he's going, you're going to be alone, so don't come here. Yeah. Leave me to my domain and you stay out. That's kind of the like smoke screen that's being presented. And so we decided that, you know, as a ministry, a way we can combat that lie is by offering people opportunities to connect with each other socially and actually see, oh man, the next time I'm in an audition room, I know five people in here who know Jesus. That's insane. Okay, cool. Now I don't have to hide. I know that I can be completely and totally, my identity is found in the Lord, so I don't have to hide anything when I walk into a room. And so that's the social side of it. We do small things. That's the kind of hanging out portion. You know, we do social things like we're going to go to the beach for the day, or we're going to go to Central Park, or we're going to whatever. But that's also an easy in for people who've maybe been hurt by the church or have questions or problems. It's a really easy in. It's really light lift. You know, hey, just come and meet people who are in the industry. It's very, very simple. We've seen the Lord move through that really in cool ways. And then the other side, or the second one, is professional. So professionalism within the industry or within the ministry, we really do believe that as people who are artists, you know, one of the first things I taught about this with Sawyer at Bible study last Monday was about God being a creative God and the way that he operates and us being created in his image, then what does that look like as a creative? How does that influence our identity? How do we operate within that, within the culture, within the world? And what does that look like in our spiritual life? And so because of that, we operate in both the professional and the spiritual together. If you cut off one side, then all of a sudden part of your ministry disintegrates. I, as a person, yes, I'm an executive director of The Hang, but I also am actively pursuing my own creative endeavors. I'm a director. I have a production company with Rachel Gifford. We're producing. I have a musical theater performance degree, so I'm still pursuing that. So I think that that is really important to be able to continue to be in the industry and not just stand on the outside, but actually to be into it and develop as a creative. My dad brought to mind the story of Bezalel in the Word, where God actually gifts him with creative gifts to be able to glorify the Lord. And so that's another lie that we come against, is this idea that your creativity, your artistry, and your faith in Jesus cannot coexist at the same time. They have to be separate. And that's not true. You can do both, and you can do excellent. You can be excellent in both. And that's actually what the Lord wants, is for you to be fully into all of these things, into those things. So that's kind of the professional side. We offer free professional opportunities with Broadway professionals and local artists who are able to create help our people develop in excellence in that way. And then the final side of it, and the most important side, is the spiritual one. So we have Bible studies every other Monday at a place called Hepzibah House on the Upper West Side in New York. It's an incredible ministry. Penny Morgan is incredible, and we love her very much. Her and her husband Andy are huge supporters of The Hang, and we love them. But we've been having Bible study there every other Monday, and we've seen, as my friend Caleb likes to say, we've seen people go from death to life in that Bible study. Slowly but surely. It is almost never immediate, ever. It is almost always over time, months if not years, of physically watching somebody change in front of your eyes through love, community, discipleship, and time in the Word. And so those are kind of the three areas. Did you want to, what specifically about the spiritual?
Well, since we're talking about, you know, disciple making leader, just what are some of the challenges to discipling someone in the city, and maybe challenges to discipling artists? You know, what does that look like from a ministry standpoint? I mean, we've heard now how that looked like in your life, but how does it look now in The Hang? You know, how do you disciple and help people grow spiritually?
Yeah. New York is a completely different culture. It's completely different. I feel like if I could like shake people by the shoulders and get people to understand, it's like moving to another country. And I'm really trying not to be dramatic, but it is. People operate differently. They speak a different language, legit. They will talk to you in different ways. Different things meet different things in New York. There's different attitudes. There's different cultural things that are accepted and not accepted. And so that was a huge learning curve for me coming from Texas, and figuring out how then do I adapt to the culture and actually speak their language. I think about Paul a lot in his different ministries to completely different cultures all over the Mesopotamia. He was in Rome for a good period and then in Philippi, and how different those cultures were, and then how did he speak to those people within their culture and call them higher into Christ. And so that's kind of how we want to operate spiritually, is to be able to do the same. Some of the hard things about the culture is it's very transient. It's extremely transient. So people are an average in New York City 3 years. I am going on my 8th year. I'll be there for 8 years in October. But because of that, people are gone for long periods of time, especially in our industry. So I mentioned Evan Bertram. Her and her husband Jackson were on the national tour of My Fair Lady for 10 months. I have another friend who just left on the national tour of 6. She'll be gone for 10 months. So there's this in and out sort of thing that's happening continually. There's a continual turnover of people. So that can be hard. That can be hard to build relationships. That can be hard to experience, tangible spiritual growth in people. But I also think the transient nature, also the culture and the like clear divide of either you are a full believer in Jesus or you are not at all. Yeah. The light and the dark are extremely clear. Because of that, it actually creates a pretty pressure cooker of spiritual growth. It's kind of like when you're in, you're 100% in, because you don't know how long you'll have to be with the people. And you also are going, okay, I'm looking and I see very dark and I see very light and I've chosen light, so I'm in. So those are both kind of good and bad things, yeah. I guess. Those are kind of the good parts and the hard parts about being in the city. With girls or with women that I've discipled in New York, I think that the time and commitment that it takes to meet every single week together to read scripture it's a hard one. It's hard because time is money in New York. It takes me an hour and a half to get to my boxing class that I take every week. So I'm going, okay, if I need to be at boxing at 10, that means I have to leave my apartment at 9:30, which means I have to be at discipleship with Anel at 8:30, probably 8, because we need an extra 30 minutes. So that means I'm leaving my apartment now at 7.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of the way that it works.
And you're subject to the train that may or may not
show up. Yeah.
Got all these hoops you have to jump through.
Yeah.
It's not like you can just get in your car and jet down there.
No, exactly not. And also the tangible nature of discipleship. Like for instance, for a while, the Grow series, we had tried to implement the Grow series within the Hang because we were like, we love this material. We know that it's really good, that it's making disciples in a very practical way. And people were super overwhelmed by it. We would put down this book in front of them and they'd be like, no, I can't do that. That's too much for me. And no, I can't do it. And so then we were like, oh, we realize it's a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. It's going, okay, they're not carrying around backpacks that have all their stuff. They need something in which they can simplify things. Lots of people in New York I've found have very, very, very low biblical literacy, like extremely low. So that means all you need, when I disciple girls, I just say all you need is a Bible and a pen and a journal, and that's it. You don't need to bring anything else with you. Just bring those things, and we're going to walk through John together. That's it. That's all you need to bring with you. And so that was a pretty cool learning opportunity for me to realize is people are hungry for God's word, and being able to, in that culture, present them with simplicity. Mm-hmm. Lots of things in their life are really complicated. Mm-hmm. Getting from place to place, thinking about time, thinking about their careers, thinking about their life. If you can give them a little taste of simplicity, man, the Lord will just bust through that. He really, really will. So that's been cool to watch people and watch these women hunger for the word. I always say it's feeding people who don't know they're hungry. That's what it feels like. Is they're like, I'm not so sure about that. And then you get a taste. They get a taste. And then, that's all that they want. It's just,
I know you've told me, too, that you will have them write out their top 5 questions.
Top 10.
Top 10 questions. Mm-hmm. And some of them are biblical questions. Some of them are social questions. And you kind of never know what you're going to get, but you've done this long enough now, you could probably guess.
Oh yeah.
Five out of the top 10,
oh, yeah.
probably, or maybe seven out of the top 10,
because yeah, yeah.
They're often the same. And then you help them address these questions,
yes,
because
yes.
those tend to be roadblocks to them moving forward spiritually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Those questions are almost always the same. It's so funny. I've discipled a good amount of girls now and continue to, and I love it. But the questions are almost always the same. That most of them, I would say about 50-50, are biblical questions. And then the other are just social. How do I operate in this world? How do I operate in this culture? When people say this, what does that mean? You know, what do I do with this major question that people keep asking me? Lots of people in New York understand cultural Christianity, what they see on the outside, but they almost have never met a true follower of Jesus,
yeah.
which is so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Because when I say I'm a Christian, people often look at me like I have four heads and they're like, oh, I know who you are. But then if I say I'm a follower of Jesus, they go, what does that mean? Tell me about that. What do you mean you follow Jesus?
Yeah.
Explain that to me. So I've started using that language more and more, being like, oh, I'm a follower of Jesus.
We were in one of your outreach events that you did a couple of weeks ago, and there was a panel of Broadway producers and actors that are all believers. And
yeah.
This is amazing. Here
yeah.
they are. They're on
yeah.
this panel. There are about six of them, and they're talking about being a Christian in that space in New York City. And one of the actors made a comment. He said, I do not know anyone in our field that truly loves Jesus and walks with Jesus and wants to obey his word.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows people that call themselves Christians, but the followers,
yeah.
I haven't met those kind of people in the industry. And I just thought that was a fascinating comment that he made.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's probably the norm, isn't it?
Yeah. It's extremely normal. The cool thing about that is he's a sweet guy and he loves Jesus. And that was a cool moment because he had said that. And then he looked around at everybody. He goes, well, I guess I can't say that anymore. and that was just really, that was a cool, it was a really, really cool moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's very normal. Cultural Christianity is pervasive. It's just part of the thing. People say if they're not an atheist, then they say they're a Christian. It's very little that you'll hear somebody say agnostic. Sometimes they'll say spiritual, but very little do they say that they're straight up atheist. Majority of people will say, oh, I'm a Christian. And I'll say, oh, really? What does that mean to you? Not a Christian. Not a true follower, not a follower of Jesus. So that distinction is really important for people. And that's one of the things we talk about in my discipleship with the girls is to be able to make that distinction. And what does it truly mean to sacrifice everything for Jesus?
Yeah.
Yeah. As I listen to you, Leobeth, I hear like some of the greatest disciple makers I know are flexible. Like that's one of the greatest attributes of a disciple maker is, hey, you have all these tools, you have these experiences, you know your culture, but if we plopped you on a desert island, or in your case, in an island called Manhattan,
yeah.
could you be able to make disciples there?
Yeah.
And I think that's where you have guiding principles. You know where you're trying to take people, but how you get there a lot of times needs to be completely different because that won't work.
Yeah.
And the same things that work here in Texas won't work in
yeah.
New York. And I think that's just really great. And again, I know that probably comes from following the Lord and some
yeah.
trial and error, but I think that's great just to being flexible and a good for our listeners to know that just being flexible with your approach, learning
yeah.
the culture, and ultimately it's just loving the people
yes.
that are there
to serve. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Ben, that as you're listening to this podcast, you're maybe thinking, well, how does this relate to me? And that is, hey, are you contextualizing the gospel where you are and being able to ask the Lord to lead you? How do I know these people and love these people and invest in them relationally and then help them grow spiritually? I think it's different in every place, right? I mean, it was different moving from Oklahoma City to here.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very different, extremely different culture. And so we had to adapt. And so I think every place where the Lord sends you as a disciple maker, you're going to have to learn to adapt to that environment and then be on mission with him.
Yeah.
So as we kind of move towards the end of our conversation, Leobeth, what would you tell a listener that maybe is serving in a hard place, and maybe they're disappointed, maybe they're frustrated. If you were having a face-to-face conversation, what would you do? What would you say to them?
Oh my gosh. One of the number one tools of the enemy is discouragement. It really is. Priscilla Shire has this quote where she says, if the enemy cannot have your soul, he will make you ineffective for the gospel. And I really do think that discouragement was one of the biggest tools that the enemy uses. Keep going. Something my dad actually told me not too long ago is he said, he quoted Matthew 11 to me, where Jesus is talking about the workers of the field, and he says, it is still day. And that's kind of been a charge recently that has really encouraged me, is it is still day. There is still time. The Lord is with you. The Lord is for you. He is working on your behalf. He goes before you. So trust that. Trust it in the heart, in the moments in which it feels impossible. Keep going, because discouragement will only lead to more discouragement. And then eventually it'll lead to despair, and then it will lead you away from the Lord. Yeah. So cling on to him, run to him. You know, the Lord says, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Yeah. It is just recently that I'm learning now as a 30-year-old woman what it really means to rest with the Lord, because I am a doer. I'm like, I would much rather do and feel accomplished and feel good about what I've done, and then be like, look, Lord, now do you love me? Now do I have your approval? Look at all the things I did for you. But that's not what is most important. What's important is intimacy with the Lord and being with him, and he will encourage your heart. He will bring you out of that discouragement. So if you're feeling discouraged, read Psalm 139. I read that almost every day. The Lord knows you. The Lord sees you. And he is with you. He's for you. Don't give in to discouragement.
Yeah.
Don't. Keep going. It's not worth it. It's really not.
So another thing we talk a lot about on some other episodes is just personal health. So as you lead, as you serve, it can be really hard. Again, there's disappointments. There's, you know, conflict. There's all these things. So you've mentioned fast pace life of New York.
Yes.
Period. You're also, you know, you have other job, like you're you're still in the industry, you're still a production company, all these things, and now you're a co-executive director. Mm-hmm. How have you learned to maintain your own personal spiritual health in the midst of all that busyness?
Oh my gosh, silence and solitude. I read a quote by C.S. Lewis that said, if you want to avoid God, avoid silence and avoid solitude. Mm. And I do not like either of those things. I prefer loud, I prefer people, I prefer fast. And praise God that I live in a city that has those things, because he's created me to be able to function within that. But getting time away, I have the blessing of living by a section of the Met in Washington Heights called the Cloisters, the Met Cloisters. If you're ever in Washington Heights, it's absolutely beautiful. I took Dad there last time
he went
with me. And it is a beautiful museum. You can go in for free. And in the museum are all of these medieval pieces of art. And I actually, we had a really big outreach event about a week and a half ago with the Hang, and it was a lot of work and it was super exhausting. And I took a day and just went up to the Met's cloisters and journaled and read my word and walked with the Lord and prayed. And that was my opportunity of just silence and solitude, just looking at images of him and reading his word and praying. And the more I can do that, the more I make space for that, even just if it's in the beginning of my day or the end of my day, just an opportunity to sit in the silence with the Lord is so, so important for my spiritual health. It's vital. I can tell if I haven't had enough silence and solitude with the Lord. I can really tell.
Word.
Yeah.
Very good.
That's great.
Craig, any closing thoughts?
You know, I think that as a disciple-making leader, wherever God has put you, you have to be willing to go where he leads. You know, and we've walked through this journey of LB, you know, moving to New York City just right out of college. You know, there's a lot of scary stuff of that. But yet just seeing the Lord go before her and using her and preparing her for this has been really, really encouraging to me and to her mom. and to just watch the good work that he's doing. And that's what he wants for all of us.
Yeah.
Every one of us, he's called us to a mission. And this is what we give our life to make disciples that will make disciples who will make disciples to the ends of the earth. And so wherever, if God's called you to New York City, or he's called you to be a stay-at-home mom, like our other daughter, who's doing an amazing job as a disciple-making leader in her home, or God calls you to the business world, or to whatever endeavors that you have, you know, that God has placed you where you are with the gifts and talents and passions to be a light for him. And not just to be a light, but to be a light that multiplies in the lives of others.
Yeah.
And so this is the calling that we have. This is the joy that we have. This is the pleasure that we have in serving him until, you know, he takes us home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Leah-Beth, it's been great. It's
Thanks
been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
It's a joy. It's a joy to watch. Again, I think when you guys moved here, I was 18 years ago. So I remember when y'all came on stage,
yeah.
you and your sister, how little y'all were out there. But it's fun to watch you serve. And again, exactly where God designed you to be serving. And so it's inspirational to me listening to your story, hopefully to our listeners as well. If you're encouraged and want to learn more about The Hang NYC, you can visit their website, thehangnyc.com, or follow them on Instagram at thehangnyc. Again, they are a 501c3 ministry, so if you want to learn more about them or donate, just go check them out and learn more about Leah-Beth and her team and how they're serving the artists and creative community of New York City. Again, thank you, Craig, for being on. Thanks for being a great dad and doing a great job. And I know that's a partnership with the Lord, but you and Liz doing a great job of being parents and disciple makers in your home.
Thank you, Ben.
And again, thank you, listeners, for being on today. We hope this was encouraging and hope to catch you soon on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.